Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf. How about a cold one on the patio during a nice spring day? But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
Great to have you with us here on the GM Shuffle. God, cannot wait for the football this weekend. You got three games on Saturday, three games on Sunday. Even if not every game is going to be spectacular, it's going to be a fun time to sit on the couch and indulge. However, it's not good news for everybody. If you see the headlines involving the Houston Texans right now, you can see why there's some concern there. They had a bad season, obviously made a change with Billy O'Brien. Deshaun Watson had a phenomenal year, and now there's reports that he wants out. This could be an absolute mess, Mike. It's very rare you get a franchise quarterback, a cornerstone guy like Deshaun Watson there. What do you make of what's happening right now with Watson and the Texans?
Deshaun Watson getting traded has about as much to happen as, you know, there's no chance. Like, there's just no chance. I mean, with Nick coming in, Nick Cesario, he's got to figure out how to solve the problem. Now, he's got some issues in Houston. I mean, there's some trust issues between the players in the front office as it relates to what's gone on there in the past. And that's probably the number one thing Nick has to handle. But the number one job, as soon as he's walked in that building, is he's got to call Deshaun, get his agent, have a meeting, and basically tell him, hey, A, we're not trading you. B, we're going to build this team around you. C, you know, you don't get to pick the coach. That's what they hired me for. You know, you got to play. We're going to do everything in our power to help you win a Super Bowl, which you're going to do during your career here. And then life's got to go on. I mean, it's a great job in the sense that you have Watson. It's a bad job. There's a big mess to clean up. There's a trust issue in the building. There's no denying it. I mean, the things that I've heard that have gone on in that building from people outside, whether they're true or not, it really indicates that there's a lack of trust between the connection between the players and the front office. And they've got to fix that. And fresh blood does that. It invigorates everyone, and you can see that. And Nick's got to go in there and really do a good job of communicating. This is fixing Houston doesn't start with getting better players. Fixing Houston starts with making their players better. And it starts with Watson.
Yeah, I always laugh when people say, you know, you treat everybody the same way. Like, of course you don't. Like, if you have a superstar player, you give him more rope than the number 53 guy on the roster. But at the same time, how much rope do you give that star player? You know, you see that sometimes in the NBA. Oh, this guy's calling the shots, or he's pushing for this trade, so we'll take his input. That's interesting to me what you said about with Watson. Like, hey, I like, as you said, the way that Nick should approach this is like, I'm the guy making the calls around here. You're not going to tell me who the head coach is. You say that obviously in a diplomatic way, you can be part of the, you know, obviously winning process what we do here, but to be bothered by the team's hiring process, like, what are you talking about? You're the quarterback. Be a great quarterback and we'll figure this out.
Yeah. I mean, look, we paid you, we rewarded you. You're part of the solution. You're not part of the problem. However, you know, you got to trust me. I trust you. We don't know each other. I don't know what's going on here. I'm going to find out what's been happening here, and I'm going to get to the bottom of it. And I promise you, I'm going to fix it. I'm going to restore the trust between us, because we can't win without trust. But I got to trust that you're going to be the best player you can be, and you got to trust that I'm going to do what's right for this organization from top to bottom. And there's not going to be any lines that mix. And I think that, you know, the prevalent thing here is Easterby, Jack Easterby, who was brought in there as the kind of the team builder, character builder. Jack's role has to change a little bit, because when Jack was with us in New England, he could perform his role brilliantly in the sense that he was with the players. He was involved with them. He wasn't in the front office. He was part of the players. So when they went to the confessional box with him, their secrets were safe. When he moved into the front office, there lies a little bit of a line that can't get crossed back over. So the role that he may have come in there for, to be the team builder, the chemistry builder, the culture builder, if he's in the front office advising salaries, there lies the disconnect that the players aren't going to communicate to you and be honest and tell you what you need to hear. And maybe they feel violated, and some of the things they said have not always been delivered, or they're perceived in the wrong way. That needs to get cleaned up. And if Easterby stays in the organization, which he obviously by hiring Nick, you know, he's going to stay and his role has to fit within the framework to where it is. And then he's got to repair his relationship with the players because, you know, we can bury our heads in the sand and say it's not, but clearly with Watson's words coming out, that's got to get fixed as well.
Yeah, the Texans did not inform Deshaun Watson intended to hire Caserio. He finds out about the hire Tuesday on social media. That led him taking to Twitter that night to post, "Some things never change." Apparently, he wanted them to hire Eric Bieniemy potentially as a head coach. Texans, you know, did not do that. So, but like you said, you got to clean that up. Say, listen, we're on the same page here. Here's what we're trying to do. And let's not post stuff on social media. We're going to get to the games in a second. I just want to do a one quick minute on the fact the Chargers did get rid of Anthony Lynn, who, as Mike said, was committing coaching malpractice. And as far as a guy to bring in, it almost feels like a headline from The Onion. They're bringing in Jason Garrett for an interview. That's right. Buffalo Bills, Brian Daboll. Hey, he's been Buffalo's OC the past three seasons. Bills ranked second in yards and points per game. Totally get that. Hey, bring in Brian Daboll. Him and Herbert together, great. The Giants, where Jason Garrett was the offensive coordinator, ranked 31st out of 32 teams in yards per game on offense and points per game. And we all know his record. Mike, you must have laughed when you heard the clapper to LA. Come on.
I did not laugh. I did not laugh. And here's why I did not laugh. Because I knew why he was going to Los Angeles. I understand why. He's going to Los Angeles, and he's going there because he is, you know, he's very close. That Jason Garrett's very close with North Turner and Jimmy Johnson. In fact, Jimmy Johnson went on Fox and really, and he and Michael Strahan and Troy Aikman, they've all endorsed Jason Garrett. I mean, look, we know this about the NFL's hiring cycle. It is a political event. It is a political event. And you, those three people, Strahan, Jay Glazer, Jimmy Johnson, all those guys, they carry political capital and they can win the Southern primaries. And Dean Spanos is highly influenced by them. I mean, Dean Spanos listens to Jimmy Johnson. He trusts him. He values his opinion. And Jimmy believes, without a doubt, that Jason Garrett's a good head coach. Now, you can argue that. I would argue that with Jimmy. I don't think anything less of Jimmy because he feels that way. But, you know, that's what he does. And I think that when you see that, that's exactly what happened. What I found fascinating, though, what I found the best was the Dave Gettleman quote that they announced Gettleman was coming back. Everybody thought Gettleman was going to retire. You know, like everybody thought Hyman Roth was going to succeed the plan in Cuba, right? You know, like, you know, Hyman Roth's been dying of the same heart attack for 20 years, so no one's leaving. But I thought the quote of the year, this has got to be the quote of the year. The possibility of Jason Garrett leaving, of course, makes you a little antsy. Just imagining anybody, any one of you guys having four editors in 4 years, it's the same thing. It's no different. No, it is different. Like if the editor's bad and doesn't know where the commas are, then or where the semicolon should be or where the pretense should be or where the post or keeping everything intense, which I have a horrible time doing. I mean, like then you got to get another editor. Like seriously, just change is bad for change sakes, but change sometimes is good because you need to change. And that quote to me, after I read that quote about four times, I said to myself, did Gettleman go to the games this year? Did he watch the games? Like, did he see their inability to adjust, their inability to create a run game? Did he see any of the things that I saw? Like, does he actually think this offense is helping Daniel Jones? Because they're putting all their marbles on Daniel Jones. Let's make no mistake about this, okay? They're putting all their marbles on Daniel Jones. And if they go 6-10 again next year, you know, we can have the I told you so conversation. So that to me was, besides I understood the clapper getting interviewed. I get that. It's the politics. It's, you know, it's what Kennedy said in a speech to Yale. I wrote about this for next week for the Daily Coach. It's one of the great, great lines. It had to come from Sorensen, because he's such a great writer, Ted Sorensen, the speechwriter for Kennedy. But this line that he writes in 1962 is so relevant to the NFL hiring circle that it wasn't meant for that. But it says, "For the enemy of truth is very often not the lie, deliberate, contrived, dishonest, but the myth, persistent, persuasive, and unrealistic. Too often we hold fast to the cliches of our forebears. We subject all facts to prefabricated set of interpretations. We enjoy the comfort of opinion without the discomfort of thought. And there, ladies and gentlemen, lies the NFL hiring cycle.
That's really eloquently expressed. I love it.
Is that great or what? I mean, I wish I wrote that. You know, Ryan Holiday taught me this, and I've done it now a bunch, is when you get something that well written, you should type it yourself to make it to, so it's like playing the piano. It's like it makes you feel like you've typed something great. Like you've played Vienna Waits for Me. Like I would, if I could play one song on the piano, it would be Vienna Waits for Me. You know, it's like, I can't play the piano. My fingers, I can't do it. I can play car piano when I'm driving. You know, I can do that. I can play that really well. You know, everybody plays on the dashboard with their fingers. But writing that, I mean, I would have loved to watch Ted Sorensen or anyone write that. That was remarkable.
I'm with you. Whenever you see something that's that good, whenever I see that great writing, like I'll write it down like in a notebook. So I'm like, I just want to go back and just marvel at the writing. Whatever subject it is, you say, hey, this could be applicable to anything. This is like listening to Mozart. This is really powerful and well done.
AD, who would have thought Jason Garrett and JFK, Yale's commencement speech at 62, would have had anything in common, and yet it's right there in front of us.
That's always the key. Bringing things together you don't necessarily see the connection with. That's what makes sense. And speaking of, The Sopranos and The Godfather. If you listen to this podcast, you know Mike and I are all over both of those shows and movies. And that's when we break down the playoff games, we'll compare them to characters from those two entities. You're not going to want to miss this.
All right, anytime you're on the golf course, you always hear the phrase, hit it long and hit it straight. Well, as somebody who's a novice to the game of golf, a new person, I wanted to make sure I had the best equipment possible. So, as a novice golfer, I went and hit up our friends over at PXG because they have an all-new driver called the Black Ops. I mean, my man Chris over in Henderson has hooked me up with a phenomenal driver that's built to my game. My new game that doesn't really do much of anything on the course, but it has what I need in terms of the club head speed and the kind of grip that I need to go out there and be the best to my ability. I mean, this is music to ears to any golfer, whether you're a novice like myself or if you've been playing the game for decades. The PXG Black Ops driver is a breakthrough in driver technology. It's a complete and total victory in golf club engineering, unlike anything you've ever seen before. Black Ops drivers are adjustable to deliver a combined MOI of 10,000 plus for unreal forgiveness. That's just ridiculously high. So what you got to do, go check out the PXG Black Ops driver. You'll be as impressed with it as I am. Learn more and get free shipping on all equipment at pxg.com/gmshuffle and use code GMshuffle at checkout. That's pxg.com/gmshuffle, code GMshuffle for free shipping on all equipment, pxg.com/gmshuffle, code GMshuffle.
All right, as always, check the most up-to-date betting lines by using the DraftKings Sportsbook app. As always, Mike will post his picks on his Twitter, M. Lombardi, NFL, so Saturday morning, I'm assuming, and Sunday morning, he will do so. As you wrap up the regular season, Mike, how'd you do with the picks?
I was 3 games under 500. Last week, I was 1-1-1, so I'm 31-34-3 this year. Terrible season for me. I should fire the general manager, the head coach, and all that, because I went to all the games. I'm like Dave Gettleman. I watched all these games, so there's got to be some overall I'm 77-56-5, so I got to bounce back here come playoff time. Hopefully I could do that, and I will.
You are going to bounce back, and here we go. We're doing bouncing back here in style. Indianapolis Colts and the Buffalo Bills. The Bills have not allowed a 100-yard rusher since week 10, and you look at the Colts and say, okay, a big part of their success has got to be Jonathan Taylor, you would think. The Bills' offense certainly has been prolific. We know about Josh Allen, the big breakthrough year he had. Chemistry with Stephon Diggs. For me, Mike, the Colts, they're Tom Hagen, okay? They're nothing flashy here. They're steady. They're the consigliere. They know what they're doing. But ultimately, they're not a wartime consigliere. And that's why Tom was out. Eventually, Michael had to make a decision. That's why I don't think the Colts win this game. And the Bills, for me, they're Adriana Lacerva, okay? She's fiery. You can't keep her eyes off of her. She walks in the room and everyone's staring at her. Yeah, okay, we got some issues as far as the mob getting their hooks in her. But I'm telling you right now, Adriana and the Bills, They make me want to watch them because they're high octane. How about for you?
I love that one. I think you beat me on that one. My Bill one was the young Michael Corleone. I think that they're blossoming themselves into becoming the Godfather. So I kind of thought they were the young Michael Corleone before he gets punched in the mouth by McCluskey. It's kind of like right there at that hospital scene where Enzo, DaBaker is outside waiting for him, you know? So I love it. I love Adriana for the Bills. I think that's the winner chicken dinner. For me, the Colts were Clemenza, you know, loyal, you know, a ground attack, not speedy, not flashy, you know, going to do exactly what they need to do. And if they can play within their game, they can function. But if they got to play outside their game and Rivers knowing he's 1-5 in playoff games outdoors and the cold weather, not sure it's going to be really good. But look, you know, we got to get to New York sometime today, step on it and watch the kids when you back out. So that was my call on Indianapolis.
And he mentioned a fat Clemenza I'm in favor of. Okay, the Rams and the Seahawks. This is Saturday at 4:40 Eastern. The Rams, to me, are big pussy, okay? There's something there that they're lacking, all right? Big pussy's a loyal guy. He's a good guy. But you know what? He's also a mob informant. And for the Rams, you say, hey, I love Sean McVay. I love their defense with Aaron Donald. But guess what? Jared Goff is a poser, all right? He is not the star quarterback they think he is. If he plays, he's compromised, just like Big Pussy was compromised by the mob. Or they're going to go with John Wolford, who, quite frankly, is inadequate. The Seahawks, I'm going to go here with Fat Clemenza, because the Seahawks, again, are loyal, reliable. They get things done. They've had some ups and downs. They've been great, though, over the last little stretch. They've improved their defense. You know, Clemenza, when you go to war, you know he's ready to go. He's got the cannolis and everything stashed away. So I got the Big Pussies versus the Clemenzas. Rams, Seahawks.
Oh, I love this. This is so good. I love it. All right, so for me, the Rams were Johnny Ola. Like, they're very quiet. They're stealth. They're doing a lot of things behind the scenes. I don't know if they're quite good enough to get in front of it, you know, because A, Goff is, you know, got the bad finger. Wolford, I didn't think played as bad, but look, their defense is really good. They bring some elements to the table like Johnny Ola did, but they work behind the scenes and they kind of handle things differently. I don't know if they're going to be good enough to win this game. And for me, Seattle, and I thought long and hard on this. I wrote down all the characters. But for me, Seattle is Feach LaMotta. Because once was the king, once had the neighborhood, once was controlling, and they're trying to fight to get it back. And they're angry, you know, and they want to come back and play. And they need to get it back. You know, they'll take over they're so fucking desperate to take it back. They'll take over landscaping, because poor Sal's landscaping business, they'll want that too. So that's where I thought the Seattle was like Feach. You know, they were there, they haven't been back, and they want their territory. Would you like some peaches? And wine, you know, the fresh peaches, you know, why don't you put those big screens back? I've got garage space. I'll just take a couple from you. I love it.
I love the Feach LaMotta, Robert Loggia. The best part of that, like you said, he's angry. You know, he's pissed off the whole time. He's getting into everybody because he knows he's not the guy he once was. Next up, Saturday, 8:15 Eastern, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Washington football team. For me, the Buccaneers are Tessio, because you think you know what you're getting here, the Buccaneers, but you don't want to underestimate them. Just like Tessio, you know, Michael did not realize who was going to be the guy that was turned against him. Afterwards, he realized, wow, Tessio is smarter than I thought he was. It was a smart play. And that's the thing with Tom Brady. He is the smart play. You realize with the Buccaneers, yes, they're not as strong as they were in the past, but they're sneaky because of Brady, because he's crafty, much like Tessio, who figured out all the angles, decided to go against the Corleone family because it was a smart play. Ultimately, though, did not work out for him, just like I don't think the Bucs are going to have a deep run. And Washington, they're Fredo. Okay, you're a division champion with a losing record. That's like the brother in the Corleone family. Everyone knows you're not smart enough, Fredo. You really shouldn't be at the dinner table here, okay? Just let the big boys talk. You can't hang with Michael. You can't hang with Sonny. You really shouldn't be here. Fredo, you're Washington.
Yeah, I mean, look, those are two good ones there. I love your thought process on this. For me, Tampa Bay was Hyman Roth. Wise, older, you know, hungry for power, won't give it up, you know, wants to try to manipulate their way through it because they need to. They know they're at the end of their rope. It's time is coming to an end. And if they don't win now, when are they going to win? You know, and for me, I like your Washington, but for me, Washington was Furio. I mean, they're a combination of Furio and Fredo, right? They're an F. They're volatile. They'll go beat somebody up. They've got great defense. they just don't have enough offense. You know, Furio's an enforcer, and that to me is what Washington is. Now, I think Washington in this game can create some real problems. I mean, when you look at Brady, whenever he's had problems in his career in playoff games, it's been against a defensive line that's been able to rush the passer and play good in the back end. Now, I don't know how good Washington could play in the back end. The thing about this game, because of Furio and the Washington football team, they're not going to score a lot of points. We know they're going to enforce, but they're not going to score. So they've got to be able to make the object offense, their defense into an offense. And I don't know if Alex Smith can play. Even if he plays, will he be healthy? I don't think so. The challenge is for Tom Brady is he can't turn the ball over. He's got to play smart, Hyman Roth. He can't make a mistake like Hyman did, you know. And let's face it, if the $2 million is on my desk by the time I wake up from the nap, they'll advance.
I love the thought process. Hyman Roth, I mean, Michael, we're bigger than U.S. Steel. He's so good. Ravens and the Titans on Sunday, 105 Eastern. The Ravens are actually 3-point favorites in Vegas, despite the fact they lost the Titans in the 2019 playoffs. That's right for me. The Ravens are Tony Blundetto, okay? Underestimate them at your own peril. You think Steve Buscemi, oh, I love Steve Buscemi. He's a good guy, nice guy. He's Tony's cousin. And then all of a sudden, look what happens to the Asian guy at the massage parlor. Like, whoa, all right, Tony's got a mean streak here in him, okay? Just like when you think the Ravens aren't what they used to be, I think Lamar Jackson can still step up. He can still do some things. He had the league's best QBR over the last 5 weeks. That was ahead of Josh Allen and ahead of Ryan Tannehill. So underestimate the Ravens just as you would Tony Blundetto at your own peril. And for the Tennessee Titans, I'm going to go with Sonny Corleone because they are explosive. All right, Derrick Henry, ground and pound. Ryan Tannehill can make plays. They are absolutely volatile. Yes, they can get gunned down at a toll booth because their defense is pretty suspect, and that's why they could get overwhelmed like Sonny did. But I'm going to go the Tony Blundettos against the Sonny Corleones, Ravens, Titans.
We're on the same page in thinking here. Exactly. We have a direct hit on one. Baltimore I had as Ralphie. Baltimore I had as Ralphie. Very volatile. They look pretty. Going to be dressed nice. You know, they make money. They move the ball. They do a lot of good things. They've got some issues. We know they got some issues, right? You know, and they can screw something up. But, you know, you don't underestimate them. I think we're on the same page there. And then I was with you on Santino. I was exactly with you. This is Tennessee's volatile. They can kill. I never thought Santino was a good Don, God rest his soul. But they're not good enough on defense to go all the way, but they're dangerous. And you better get them at the toll booth. If not, we better get them now while we got the muscle. And I think that's clearly the case. I love it.
I love that we have a direct hit on this one. Of all the different characters, we both completely agree on the Titans. Sunday at 4:40 Eastern. I think this could be the worst game of the weekend. I'll still be watching it, of course. The Chicago Bears taking on the New Orleans Saints. We'll be watching it because the Bears, we've already discussed, they are the Jackie Juniors, okay? Come on. Mitchell Trubisky, the fact that he had this four-game stretch, everyone goes, oh my God, look how good he's playing. It was against defenses, the Vikings, the Texans, the Jaguars, and the Lions. They were ranked in defense-adjusted value over average 14th, 29th, 31st, and 32nd, okay? He's a clown. He's a putz. Jackie Jr., everyone knows, is unworthy of being a part of the table. Same with the Chicago Bears. The Saints, Mike, I got to be honest, I could not find a great one for the Saints. I went with Carmella because, listen, veteran presence, nice way of saying it. Listen, Carm still looks good. There's no question about it. She's a phenomenal cook, just like the Saints. They got an excellent defense. Alvin Kamara, we love. But I don't know if they have that necessary spark to, you know, to keep Tony away from that wandering eye. So I'm going to go with Jackie Juniors and Carmella's. What do you got?
Well, I love it. I love that. You know, for me, I think we're on the same page with Chicago. We just picked different characters. I made Chicago Carlo because he's in the family. He got in the playoffs, right? He's in the family, but he don't belong. You know, like he really doesn't belong. And he's going to get killed sooner than later. And, you know, he's not really trustworthy to think that MVP Mitch is going to be able to go into New Orleans with or without fans and go in there and run the football and be all effective. So I made them Carlo. For New Orleans, I had a hard time with New Orleans too. I went Silvio for New Orleans because they're wise. They tend to panic when they get the big job. Remember when he's sitting on the toilet in there and Paulie and Vito want to get settled on a deal and he's smoking, he's reading the paper. He can't even take a shit. He's not comfortable being in the big time chair. Well, I mean, let's face it, the last few times that the Saints have played in big games, they haven't been comfortable in the big chair. You can blame Bill Vinovich, you can blame the catch there, but you know, something always seems to fall apart. So I went with Silvio there. I think that I respect him because I love Silvio, but I don't know if they're able to really handle the big pressure.
Yeah, respect them, but you don't really fear them. And the final game, the Cleveland Browns taking on the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Browns, for me, and maybe this is because I love the character so much, they're Frankie Pentangeli, okay? They get a little fired up. They get a little emotional. They're causing a scene at the wedding. They get in Michael Corleone's face. They say that they're going to, you know, turn on him. And then ultimately what happens? As soon as Frankie Pentangeli's brother walks in the courtroom, I don't know. I got no issue with Michael Corleone. I don't know what you're talking about. Once the Browns honestly face pressure, now Kevin Stefanski's unavailable. Their head coach. Now all of a sudden, Baker Mayfield's going to shrink from the spotlight. That's why, to me, they're the Frankie Pentangeli. I'll believe it when I see it. And the Pittsburgh Steelers, again, old and wise, but vulnerable. That's Don Corleone. I respect what Ben Roethlisberger has done over the years. Mike Tomlin's won a Super Bowl. Yeah, it's the black and gold, and we've got lots of tradition and history. But ultimately, that means you're vulnerable. Sometimes Sisolazzo can try to take you out. I'm going to go with the Frankie Pentangeli's against the Don Corleone's, Brown Steelers.
All right. So for me, I think we're on the same page on Cleveland. We picked different guys. I think they're Phil Leotardi. They've got volatility. You know, they've made some compromises. You know, they wanted manicotti. They settled for grilled cheese on a radiator. You know, they have no scraps left in their scrapbook. They've got to really just go all in and do this because they don't have a coach. They're going to have to do that. So I went with Phil. You know, and their reign might not last very long, but they're going to give it everything they have, you know. And so this thing of theirs is going to work. And for me, Pittsburgh is Jackie Aprile before, you know, when he had cancer. There's something wrong. He's still running the family. You know, he's in the hospital. They're bringing girls over to pay attention to him. You know, but, you know, he's sitting there with Uncle Junior trying to settle the trucking company they had to settle there. I forget the name of it, but anyway, you know, he's got to settle. He's throwing up. He's trying to settle it. He's got something wrong, even though he's still the boss. To me, that's Pittsburgh. They got something wrong and they might die, but they could last long enough to get to the end.
I love that we're on the same page. Even if it's different characters, there's definitely a similar DNA.
I'm really convinced they should teach a course. I mean, schools should teach a course. Leadership by the Godfather. You know, there's so many lessons to learn in there. And obviously the Sopranos has got so many lessons to learn. And one thing I've always felt about the Sopranos, and I've said this numerous times, is the reason you can't really put Melfi in any of these roles is because Melfi drove all the stories. She was truly the instrument that allowed the show to move. Every time as a writer, David Chase needed to send the show in a different direction, he went to Melfi. You know, there is Gloria sitting in the lobby. You know, how to handle Vito. You know, all the things kind of played through her, and that's what made the show so great.
I agree. That was a different element from other mob shows. Like, wait, we're going to have a shrink? Like, yeah, absolutely. We're going to have a psychiatrist, and the main character is going to divulge everything he's feeling to her. That's going to be the way that will set everything in motion. Calmly Trucking, by the way. I think that's what you were thinking of there with Jackie Aprile. When we come back, we'll do a little questionnaire from the GM Shuffle, open up the mailbag, plus maybe a little conversation about coaches and GMs. That's coming up. The GM Shuffle mailbag, as always, you can email us, thegmshuffle@gmail.com. This one's from Chris. We're deep in the new hire season. I've always been curious about what goes on for the different interviews behind closed doors. How are GMs, coaches, and coordinators interviewed? What sort of questions does each level get? Who runs the meetings? How many candidates do you bring in? Do you usually know who your guy is before they even show up? Go ahead, Mike. You've been there.
You know, it's interesting. So oftentimes, these are not football interviews. These are more personality interviews. They're driven. It depends on who's running it. You know, when Al Davis was in the room, you know, Al Davis would make the coach go to the blackboard and, you know, and handle, he would ask a question, a football question. Okay, here's the situation. How would you play this? Here's the situation. What would you do? You know, and I wrote extensively about it in Gridiron Genius, the questions to ask, but I've never been in an interview to be able to ask those questions. There's too many people in the interview room that don't know anything about football. You know, they don't know anything about football. They're trying to evaluate somebody without football knowledge. It would be like me trying to talk to a doctor, you know, interviewing doctors. I don't have enough knowledge of the of their profession to really do it. And this is why people can win interviews. This is why it's electable. This is why the Kennedy quote's so prevalent. So, you know, you've got a lot of people involved. You don't have a lot of people that truly understand what they're looking for. That's the other big issue, is they've never written down what they want, what they need, you know, what they fail to do. There's never enough honesty within their organization. They want to copy somebody else. You know, we want to be like the, you know, Seattle. So we'll hire Robert Salai and he'll give us the Seattle feel to our franchise and San Francisco feel. Well, you know, I mean, that's just one piece of it. It's really the wrong process of hiring, which is why, you know, that Kennedy quote still applies. So in the perfect world, if you were being interviewed by a football person, it would be Blackboard on the board, going through football questions, going through organizational questions, asking him how he would handle different situations. You know, how are you going to handle the fat guys? You know, what happens if, you know, one of your players does this? What are you going to do? How are you going to handle an offensive coach who goes rogue? What are you going to do? How are you going to adjust the staff? What are you going to do? You know, what's your philosophy on this, this, and this? Those aren't the questions that get asked.
That's good stuff. And there's an update from Tim, by the way. This is the guy whose wife took him on the Sopranos tour. He said, my wife and I were playing a game of Scrabble recently. She kept drawing awful letters. She had to play words like cat and car. After playing thus, she said, damn it, I feel like Jackie Jr. today. She's watching the show for the first time. We just finished season 3. Thought you'd appreciate the story. Jackie Jr. playing Scrabble. Like a typical stonad, right, Mike, as you'd say?
Yeah, it's so bad. It's so good. Ass, how about like giving me some? Like, seriously, what a moron. You know, I still think one of the best lines of all was when Ralphie said, oh, I guess Tony should break the dean's head because you couldn't fucking do anything in school. Like, seriously, he's so entitled. I mean, he's just, you would think a mafia kid wouldn't feel entitled, and he was all about being coddled. And you can blame Rosalie on it, but I think ultimately it's still Jackie Jr. is a product of his father.
Oh, yeah. And the way that Ralph Cifaretto just couldn't stand the fact he had to look after Jackie Jr. was also very funny to me. His angst with realizing Jackie Jr. is a pain in the ass. All right. As always, you can follow us. Follow Mike at M. Lombardi NFL. That's his Twitter handle and Instagram. He'll tweet out his picks Saturday and Sunday. You can follow me, Adnan S. Burke. And as always, you can follow us on Instagram at the GM Shuffle. Seriously, it's going to be a great weekend of football. We'll be back to wrap it all up for you on Monday.